Okay, we're going to take your calls now this hour with Joshua Warren. Questions for him, or maybe even some of your ghost stories that he can analyze. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Joshua, how does 2012 tie into all the work you've been doing? Where do you see the similarities here?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked that because years ago, I was completely uninformed regarding 2012. I didn't know why the people made a big deal over it. I thought, okay, the calendar ended, you know, they ran out of stone or something. You know,
yeah.
Why is this a big deal? But what I'm finding is that, indeed, the Mayans seem to be great experts, maybe the greatest experts in history regarding the appreciation for time and cycles in the universe. And I was unaware until just recently that they not only were able to look at the way the universe works, but also they made a lot of predictions about cycles that seemed to be rather accurate. I mean, in fact, I was so impressed when I started looking at the cycles they predicted that I have a cruise that's going to go down to the Mayan ruins this May. I'm taking a group down there to try to explore those ruins. I've never done this before, and I just spent 7 days looking at what the heck these guys were thinking, trying to get a feeling for the cycles they had in mind. I'm taking experts with me. Karen Korp is one who is an author who's visited the sites numerous times and knows a lot about the activity there. So I don't know precisely what it is about 2012, but I do know that the Earth and everything that happens here does seem cyclical, and it's really disappointing to see how little that many people appreciate history, because history does repeat itself.
It sure does.
So I do think that, you know, there is something extreme that is going to occur, and just looking at it from my perspective of getting all these reports of UFOs and ghosts and so on, and the people who are contacting me, same as you've said you've seen, the Mayans, they knew something climactic was coming in 2012, and I have no doubt that, well, we are going to see some amazing stuff over the next few years.
Let's go to the phones now. Here we go. First-time caller, Casey in Greenville, South Carolina. Hi, Casey.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
I had a question about the part y'all were talking about, the religion. I'm actually working, and I drive a truck, and I was out of the truck at that time. If you could explain a little what y'all had said about the religion part and believing in the ghosts. And
all right, Josh.
Yeah, well, we referenced religion a number of times, and I'm glad you've asked this, Casey, because I think that I'm the type of person, of course, who will go out there and try to take measurements and try to determine what's happening in the world of mysteries by conducting experiments. But the average person seems to look at the mysterious through the framework of religion, whether it is, you know, the origin of man or the destiny of mankind or miracles or prayer and healing and all this. Religion seems to be the framework through which that works. I myself find that religion can be really good and really bad at the same time, depending on how it is viewed by the individual who adheres to it. Because the good thing about religion is that, you know, if you have a religion that says to love others and do unto others as they do unto you, which is what most religions basically say, well, then this is something you can fall back on when you're giving into those animalistic instincts to, you know, want to kill somebody or take something that's not yours or whatever. On the other hand, once you adopt a religious mindset, then you also are adopting a set of conclusions. And I do not think that we have enough information to draw some of the conclusions about the meaning of life that religion draws. And we have to realize that most of the major religions were founded by people who didn't know how a microwave oven works, you know. So you have to put these things into proper perspective. I also feel like that when it comes specifically to the Bible and Christianity, and mind you, I was raised Southern Baptist, even though I have an agnostic point of view now. A lot of people say the Bible, because of what happened with Saul and King Samuel, and it's kind of a long story, I won't get into that, that basically you're not supposed to go out and try to communicate with the dead. Well, that may or may not be true, but even if that is true, The type of work that paranormal investigators like myself do is not the same type of thing that, say, a medium might do. I don't go out there trying to initiate some type of contact with people who don't want to be contacted. All I try to do is go to places where this type of contact is supposedly already occurring and document whether or not it is occurring. So we could do a whole show on that relationship between religion and the paranormal. But in a nutshell, I think that's pretty much the points that we covered earlier.
Dan in Asheville, North Carolina, your neck of the woods. Go ahead, Dan.
Hello, Mr. Warren. I've got two questions for you.
Sure.
Okay. My first question is, what kind of messages were people getting generally down in Puerto Rico? I'm really curious to what the paranormal were saying to them. My second question is, normally you go out and hunt the paranormal. Has the paranormal ever come and hunted you and maybe given you some type of message?
Okay.
And if so, what?
All right, very good. I'll let you listen on your radio. Go ahead, Josh.
Well, you know, there actually is a potential connection for me between those two questions. Number one, when it comes to these orbs of consciousness that are communicating with people in Puerto Rico, there is no one singular consistent theme, but the types of thing, the closest I could come to that would be people who are in key positions down there, whether it's in the media or government, being told that there is a some knowledge, that there is some reawakening that's going to come, that they're going to play some role in helping to communicate a message. Now, the reason that I find this so interesting is because of a personal experience that I had, which is similar to what I've heard other people talk about over the past year. I, as I said earlier, am a very vivid dreamer. And a lot of times I'll be up all night, just like I am tonight, and then I'll sleep into the afternoon. Well, I, maybe about 3 or 4 months ago, maybe 6 months ago, I had a dream that seemed more than a dream, and I don't know if it was or not, but I just remember it in such detail. I have a lot of dreams where I'm flying, out-of-body type deals, and I remember in this dream I was over my house, and I was flying around, and all of a sudden I looked over, and I was shocked to see this silver circular object there with a being inside of it, a being that didn't look like a gray alien. It looked kind of like a more of a slender humanoid type, and the being said, "You have to come with me." And I said, "I don't want to. I was afraid, but I didn't have any choice." And so I went into this craft, and I ended up going to a mothership where I had a meeting with these beings, and the being said to me, "We have a message," and they were very friendly to me. Fortunately, there was nothing nefarious involved. "We have a message that we're trying to give mankind, and we want you to be a part of this. And we're going to send you, we're going to give you, actually, they said, we're going to give you an option. You can come with us right now and work with us on this end, or we can send you back." And I had this distinct impression that if I went with them, that my wife was going to find a dead body when she came back home. And so I said, "I'll go back to the bedroom." Well, I woke up after this, and I thought, wow, that was one of the craziest dreams I've ever had. And since then, at least two of my friends, and I did not talk about this, at least two of my friends have contacted me and said they had a dream that is extremely similar to this. So since we've started discussing it, then we've wondered, wait a second, is there some impression that people around the world are getting right now where they're having these kinds of dreams? Or are we being taken on some astral level, you know, when we're sleeping and told these things? I don't know. I really don't know. But if any of your listeners have had a similar experience, I'd love to hear about it, because it was the weirdest dream that I had that I've had, because it seemed so realistic. So when it comes to have I been visited, I don't know, but that could be a possibility.
Okay, let's go back to some of the calls. Thank you, Josh. Andrew in Richland, Washington. Hey, Andrew, you're up with us.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
That's good. Your guest was talking about when he was down in Costa Rica, or I can't remember where he was in the ocean, and he saw the white light and a flash.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually experienced that same thing about 2 weeks ago. I was working at a train yard in the middle of nowhere, and I was just getting ready to end my shift, and all of a sudden there's just a white streak and a white flash in the background, and it just disappeared in a matter of seconds. I've never seen anything like that before.
You know, I'm glad you called in with that, Andrew. I did not actually see a streak. Mine was just an explosion. But now, where did you see this again? Where are you located?
In the Tri-Cities, Southeast Washington.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, one funny thing, I was talking earlier about the fact that right now there seems to be what some have called a quickening. There seems to be this increase in various sightings. And I know that just recently there was some type of a UFO that people saw in two states, in North Carolina and in South Carolina. People who are, you know, hundreds of miles apart saw this light in the sky that divided into two. And I don't even know if it's possible for people hundreds of miles apart to see the same thing. I guess it is. We all see the moon, right? But anyway, my experience was on August the 4th. It was on Monday, August the 4th. I don't know, you know, if there was a streak, I didn't see it, but and if there is such a thing, I mean, I've heard about exploding meteors. I think it's a rarity, but you seem to make a really good case, give a really good example for what people are seeing right now. And after you saw this, was there anything notable that happened to you?
It just was weird. I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, well, it's a mystery. It's a mystery, but I hope that you'll email me. Go to joshuapwarren.com and email me. And I'm taking reports like this right now to see if I can find some type of a map, or some type of a route system. And so, it's, you know, if you go to the website, you can email me. And also, I want to give a shout-out to the unofficial MySpace page for Coast to Coast AM at myspace.com/coasttocoastam, because those guys do a really good job of sending reports to me as well. And those are just two ways you can contact me with these. But thank you, Andrew.
What drives you, Joshua? I mean, you've been doing this for years. How come?
Well, I guess that a part of it is just basic human curiosity, whatever that is, whatever it is that makes us want to explore, that made those crazy guys hundreds of years ago want to jump on a ship and just go sailing off amongst all the sea monsters and knowing they might slide off the edge of the earth. That's a part of it. But I think more importantly, we define value as having some relationship with rarity. The rarer something is, the more valuable it is. And these experiences are the rarest types of experiences that you can have. And that's what makes them special, and therefore that's what makes them valuable. So there is some part of me, I guess, that's never satisfied, that is always wanting to discover more. I don't know if that's a gene. It probably is a gene. I think all of us who have, you know, especially heritage in this country, have, you know, some type of explorer, you know, gene in us. But ultimately, it's a matter of wanting to see things that most people don't get to see, and maybe the meaning of life is to learn.
Let's go to Ben in California. Hey, Ben, take it away.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I wanted to share about a sighting that I saw with two other friends, my friend and his girlfriend at the time that they broke up. But I was driving from on Highway 101. It's a coast road on the West Coast.
Okay.
And we were driving to Fort Bragg, and we got to, as we were driving, I kept, like, there was all these fishing boats out on the ocean, and I kept saying to my friend, like, jokingly, because we always joke around, because we've seen UFOs and stuff before, but, like, far off and weird, you see a lot of stuff up here, but, so I'm like, hey, there's a UFO, and he's like, no, that's a fishing boat, or we're like, that's a fishing boat, and I'm like, I know, I'm just kidding, and I'm just messing with you, and then we keep driving, and we get to, like, the Navarro River. And I'm sorry, really excited. when we see, we're like driving right across the bridge, and I look up, and there's, it like kind of just popped up like out of nowhere, you know, like it wasn't there, and then it was like 1 minute, you know, and it was huge. It was like a saucer-shaped object, but like I'm talking the size of like a bunch, like a nuclear submarine in length.
Definitely like, not of this planet, you think?
Definitely. Well, I don't know. Because, I mean, it could be from this planet or it could be from somewhere else, but I wouldn't know. But, I mean, or I don't know.
Yeah, we see, we don't know. That's the thing. We just don't know, Joshua, where these things come from.
Well, I find that the Ben's story is especially interesting because he and his friend were talking already about the idea of seeing a UFO. And here we are coming up soon on the Halloween season, and the connection there is that people, they often say, is there more paranormal activity around Halloween? And there actually seems to be more. It could be just because it's reported more, which we know it is. But I also think that your desire has something to do with creating these experiences or at least making you aware of them. And so when Ben and his friend are out there and, you know, they're already in the mindset of seeing something, that is step number one in order to create it. And it also makes us wonder about the idea of the tulpa, which is something that goes back thousands of years. We associate that word specifically with the Tibetans, the idea that if enough people get together and they desire something and envision something, they can actually create it. And I know it seems unbelievable once you do it, because we don't have any mechanism in conventional science to show us that we can do this, even though there are some people I know who are big experts in the field who swear that, you know, telekinesis is a real thing, and this is a part of telekinesis. But it reminds me of an experiment that was done, I think, maybe in the 70s, called the Philip Experiment, in which a bunch of people, I'm pretty sure it was in Canada, they decided they were going to create a ghost. And they came up with a name for the ghost and a character profile and all these details. They called him Philip. And every time something weird would happen in their little social group, they would say, oh, that was just Philip. And then after a few months, well, Philip actually appeared. And we don't know if this is some other spirit that just took on the form, the profile they created, or if they literally created this manifestation, this imprint, very similar to what some authors supposedly do. I have stories about authors who create the ghosts, if you will, of their characters because they focus so intensely on envisioning that character. It may be that when you're out there and you're looking for something and you're talking about it, you might actually be able to create it.
Well, Josh, I got to tell you, it plays with the mind, doesn't it? Just trying to figure out what it is.
It's all about the mind. It's about that mind-body-environment relationship, and that is what makes it so complex.
Josh, give us your website, sir.
My personal website is joshuapwarren.com. My last name is W-A-R-R-E-N. There is no period after the P. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll find a lot of links to things we've discussed tonight. Also, if you're interested in attending our free UFO conference or contest this Friday, go to ufocontest.com. But we have all kinds of free pictures and video clips and good stuff like that on my team's website, and that is lemurteam.com, L-E-M-U-R-T-E-A-M, lemurteam.com, and thank you for allowing me to give those out, George.
Absolutely, and we'll be back with final phone calls with Joshua Warren on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Michael Brooks joins us, and he's going to be talking about some scientific anomalies that he believes to be incredible mysteries on this planet. Joshua, before we go back to more calls, I want to comment a little bit on this picture you sent us about St. Pius that we've got on the web. Is that, first of all, is that really his body?
You know, you read my mind, George, because I just realized we hadn't talked about this. I shouldn't be surprised, though, I guess. yes, this is a real body posted at Coast to Coast AM. I sent this to Lex. However, the body is largely porcelainized, I guess you'd call it. There is a layer of porcelain over majority of the body so that it looks like flesh. It sort of mimics the look that he's still alive. This is a body that is on display in a glass coffin in the old San Juan Cathedral there in Puerto Rico. And when you look at him close, and in fact, I sent some of the best pictures I have and I'm looking right now, you can see that if you look very closely at his face, the teeth are real.
Bad teeth, by the way.
Those are bad teeth. It kind of reminds me of shark teeth. It looks like, you know, layers of teeth. I can only imagine that over time that they have sort of shifted around. I can't explain why they look so bizarre, but there is also a photograph of his skull cap, because when they put the layer of porcelain over most of his body, they left the top of his head uncovered. I'm not sure why they did that. It might be because they believed that the spirit needed to exit or enter through the skull cap.
Were those his real eyes that we see there?
I do not believe those are his real eyes, no.
Okay.
But this is an area that is so powerful. I mean, there are some people who collapse when they see this figure.
Yeah.
And, of course, I've gotten numerous reports from my research in Puerto Rico from people who say that they have seen the spirit of this saint wandering around those grounds, especially at night. But it is on the homepage of coasttocoastam.com, and so I hope people will check those out and, you know, get an idea of just one of the weird things in Puerto Rico that you may not have known about before.
Is that his real hair, do you think?
I don't think so.
Okay, so they've really made a lot of him up there.
Yes.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Let's pick it up by going to Gerald driving in Wisconsin. Go ahead, Gerald.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Great to talk with you finally. I'd like to say that I stay on night shift just so I can listen to your show.
Good for you. Thank you.
I drive local out of Milwaukee, and I got done early tonight. Just a quick comment, a few quick comments about some of the different aspects tonight. One, I appreciate the comments on the auras. I've been kind of wondering about that off and on, and it wasn't too long ago that I was just about spent. I had gotten back to the house ready for bed, and I was exhausted and was finally able to see my aura, and it had a green tint around my hand. Haven't been able to see it since then, but now I've got a pathway to go looking for it. Secondly, you mentioned the vivid dreams. I remember reading or hearing something about how to induce vivid dreams, something about pointing the bed towards a particular direction. Are you familiar with that?
You know, I have not heard that. I have heard about using the pyramid power, taking some type of a small cardboard pyramid and hanging it over your bed to help induce dreams, but I had not heard about aligning your bed.
Okay. I had pointed our bed into a corner, which created a pyramid, and both my wife and I just started having just crazy vivid dreams, and it got to the point where we had to pull the bed away from the corner. and I've always kind of remembered about that, and I'm inclined to put it back again, but we really have a small room. So also, you said something about the power of the mind, and I remember as a child, I was about 15 years old, we had a severe electrical storm with no rain, and this was South Mississippi back in probably mid-80s, and I remember specifically saying, wouldn't it be cool to see a bolt of lightning come down, make a circle, and then come back together and hit the ground, and within 5 seconds, it did that.
Hmm.
And I've never tried it since then, but it always stands out in my mind that, like the Rosicrucians say, that the power of the mind, we play with the dream ether when we visualize stuff. So that kind of rang true on that. And question for the rest of the audience, how hard do you think it would be to put a motor inside a motor and have them spin in opposite directions? And that kind of dealing with the UFO stigma.
Well, I think that's a form of propulsion system that probably works on some kind of magnetic system, spinning that way.
Yeah, I don't see any reason that we cannot achieve some type of really efficient virtual perpetual motion. And when I say virtual, I mean that a water wheel is virtual perpetual motion. Is it technically perpetual motion? No, it's not going to run forever because someday that water is not going to be there, but it's virtually perpetual motion. So is solar energy. I think that there must be some way of us tapping into and harnessing the rotation of the Earth using some gyroscopic method that seems to defy that motion so that we can get some type of potential gain. But more importantly, I think, when it comes to what Gerald was saying regarding the power of the mind, I talked earlier about how I always have dreams about flying. Well, I also have dreams about being telekinetic all the time. And I think that, you know, a lot of times when you dream something, it's just wishful thinking. You know, you're realizing some fantasy. So I've always been really intrigued with telekinesis because there are many parapsychologists out there, like Dr. Andrew Nichols, like Lloyd Auerbach, who very vehemently defend their position that ghosts are telekinetic projections, that if you go out and you photograph something that shows an apparition, well, you have created this. You have actually influenced the film or whatever medium you're using, and you have created this. Or if some apparition appears, that it may be some kind of holographic projection from the people who were there. And they have told me that they feel this so strongly because these two guys, who are very no-nonsense guys, who are almost curmudgeonly in many ways when it comes to paranormal investigation techniques being used now, they both swear that they have witnessed telekinesis being used in the laboratory, especially produced by a guy named Martin Caden, who was a very dynamic personality, big, boisterous fellow who was, I think, a war hero. He was a pilot. He was an author. In fact, he wrote the sci-fi novel Cyborg, upon which the $6 Million Man was based. And they both have told me personally, face-to-face, that they had done experiments in which they not only saw Martin Caden move these pinwheels across the room under domes, but that they actually created experiments where they would take a table, draw a grid pattern onto it, and label it, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G down one side, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the other, put a ping pong ball on this table, cover it with a glass case, sometimes even suck the air out of it so that it was pretty much a vacuum, and say to him, we want you to make this ping pong ball move from A3 to F6. And he would look at it and actually make that ping pong ball move to that spot time and time again. Now, I wish that I could see something like that. I have not. But I have no reason to disbelieve these guys. I mean, they seem to be very credible fellows. And so it seems to me, if this is indeed possible, if you can look at a ping pong ball and make it move from one specific point to another, then why should there necessarily be a restriction on that? From a quantum level, why can't you look up and control the pattern of lightning in the sky, like Gerald was talking about? Why can't you, you know, expand your mastery of the Force, you know, to such an extreme degree? If you can make a ping pong ball move from here to there, then you know, time and space and distance and all these things should not be a big obstacle for you. And, yeah, when it comes to people envisioning things, whether it's lightning or flying saucers or ghosts, that's one thing that makes it so difficult that we can't necessarily take the observer out of the situation and know what happens otherwise. It's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. That by simply observing something, you change what is being observed, or in simpler terms, the old, you know, if a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, you know, the rest. That's a big, big challenge we're up against when we're trying to measure these really subtle energy fields and subtle information at places where there is some kind of connection between the mind of the observer and the impact of what is being observed.
Let's go to our first-time caller line, Victor in Los Angeles. Hey, Victor, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing, George?
Good.
And your guest, Joshua?
Joshua Warren.
Or could I say Joshua? yes. First, I have three issues here. Well, one's going to be for George. Possibly you mentioned earlier about your friend who passed. He had a motorcycle accident,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you're wondering, you said you saw the body, and you were wondering, did he just pass on and that's it?
That was it. Nothing else. He's
done. Well, I think you're just that, just the thought of that, or just you mentioning that tonight could have been his communication to you. Like, well, bring me up. Bring me up as, you know, as an issue. Or every time that you do bring him up is a communication, but yet you don't understand that he's communicating with you to bring his presence, you know, and memory of him. Now, and it doesn't sound like he's somebody, like you mentioned earlier, Joshua, has passed on further. It seems like somebody who is hovering nearby.
He may be, yeah.
Every time you mention him, well, by an instant, there he is.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, George, check this out. Remember me? Yeah. Now, another thing that you're very, very interested in, Joshua, is about the experiences with, like you said, transported to the mothership, per se.
Yeah, it was a sort of a dream-like experience that I had. Yeah.
Well, you're talking to an expert on that.
Okay.
Believe it or not. Write down if you've ever seen this individual on the web. He can actually communicate and somewhat just request by some type of prayer for the ships to arrive and show up. Well, that could be possible, and as well as in the dream.
Is that that prophet?
Yeah.
Prophet Yahweh.
That is possible. And right here over Los Angeles, let alone anywhere in the United States or in the world, you can do that. They're so anxious to make their communication and presence known, but yet the rules and regulations by the government and the agencies that have communications with them, right on up to the spiritual world.
What do you think of Prophet Yahweh, Joshua?
Well, you know, I think that indeed, if it is possible for us to envision something and make it happen, then that might tie into what he is doing. But more specifically, I have to lean back onto my experience with our UFO contest, because for 3 years, this Friday will be 4 years in a row now, we've told people to come out and try to fake UFOs.
Right,
and I have seen
some incredible things, haven't you?
I've seen some incredible things, and I think that Prophet Yahweh is most likely creating fake UFOs. I really do, based upon what I've seen from the contest. It seems like the way these things appear in the sky and the way they move can be explained in much more down-to-earth conventional ways rather than jumping to the conclusion that he's communicating with some other greater intelligence. Because if he's doing that, well, then what's stopping them from coming down and, you know, landing and meeting him right there on the ground? So I have seen these helium-powered craft or craft that remain airborne because of helium change their pattern, their flight pattern in the air by hitting different currents. And I've seen guys who are great experts, who are hot air balloonists, who know the way those currents work. And if the conditions are right and they know what they're doing, they can make a craft go up and do all kinds of weird stuff in the sky that looks very controlled and intelligent. I've seen them make them go up and then down and then left and then right, and stuff that you would not think is possible. But it comes from just knowledge of your surroundings. And I've never seen Prophet Yahweh do anything that I think cannot be reproduced by simpler means. On the other hand, I must say that, as the old saying often goes, just because there are counterfeit $20 out there, that doesn't mean there are no real $20 bills. Just because you can fake something doesn't mean the genuine article doesn't exist. But given all the other information that we've gained about Prophet Yahweh, I do not think he's doing anything extraordinary.
Bill in Las Vegas, a couple minutes to go. Go ahead, Bill.
Hi. Yeah, as I said earlier, I'm Bill. I'm sorry if I sound kind of nervous. I just get this way. But
that's right.
It's nice to talk to you, George. And Jacob, was it?
Joshua.
Joshua. Oh, I'm sorry about that. You know, I'm a photographer here in Vegas, and I have friends who are photographers, and I love to look at pictures, especially of ghosts or anything, really. I just love to see pictures. So I took a look at the picture of the ghost of the White House.
Okay.
And there's a couple of things about it that make me, and I'm not trying to be like a skeptic here or anything. I'm one of those people that really wants to believe. But there's a couple of things that make me think this picture isn't of a ghost. And you, Joshua, you talked about how you said you don't think it's long exposure or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are two things of evidence in there that are strong to say that that's not actually true. One is there's these lights in there to light up the construction area.
Right.
And they're all over, and they're in a star pattern. If you notice it, the lights give off a star pattern, and that comes from long exposures. If you look at pictures that are really quick of bright lights that are highlights pointed at the camera, they'll come out as like orbs.
But why would this figure be the only translucent one of the bunch?
Well, that's because I believe that the photographer may have done a long exposure to get all the highlights, and then they may have done something called a double exposure, where it's a technique that you can only do in film, and I think some digital cameras allow you to do it.
Well, this was 1950. They didn't have digital.
Right, exactly. But it's something it's a technique that's very known by photographers that did film, and it's a double exposure where you take one picture and then you take another. Now, people like to use it for a lot of arts design where they have, like, you know, like someone looking down on someone and all that. But they may have used it here to increase the quality of the image because it's a wonderful-looking picture, I have to say. It is. And what I think it was is one exposure, everyone was standing still, and the photographer asked everyone to stand still. And you can notice that everyone who isn't a ghost there is looking at the camera. And that's because I think they wanted to stand still for the picture. And you notice the machinery is not even operating.
Well, and you may be right. Even the ghost, hey, call in during one of the open line nights with us because I'd like to talk with you further about that. Joshua, we're out of time, my friend.
Yes, well, I'm glad that Bill called in, and I want to hear more thoughts on this.
Yeah, I do too.
People who
it sounds
earlier,
like he knows what he's doing.
If you go to joshuapwarren.com, you can go find a link and look at this picture of what it seems to be an apparition in the White House. But, George, thank you so much, as always, for helping me gain this information, get this access to your audience, and this is what keeps the research advancing.
You're the best, my friend. Stay in touch. Joshua P. Warren. For Kara Scoburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.